Chapter 22. Zara. I sink my teeth into a sticky bun covered in honey, chewing happily as I walk away from the grinning street vendor. The doughy morsel is filled with a sweet fruit paste, and it's still warm from being fried in a big pan of sizzling oil. I'd smelled the vendor's goods from a block away and knew immediately that I had to taste whatever it was that he was making. The man, wearing a flour-dusted apron, had been wary of my blue robes, recognizing me as an outsider, but the coin I'd given him changed his mind, convincing him to serve me, despite my allegiance. I knew that I overpaid for the sticky bun, probably by a wide margin, but I was all too happy to do so. Weeks of living on meager portions of tasteless food have given me a tremendous appetite, one that only confections, apparently, can satisfy. What's the point of being a mage if you can't indulge yourself every once in a while, I think, as I devour the last of the pastry. Several days have passed since our liberation from the prison, a dull period where little has been expected of us by our nightingale captors. The three of us have learned nothing regarding the escape of Rallo's, and few in the city have been willing to even talk with us, although Elias has dropped by at least once a day to check in and make sure we haven't been stirring up trouble. Truth be told, things continue to be rather boring. Without a defined purpose, it seems as if we've been left to float aimlessly about in this strange subterranean world. Owen has taken to brooding by himself, interspersed with bouts of sparring and vigorous exercise. Most of the time he doesn't even leave his room. Talon, on the other hand, frequents the city's taverns and gambling halls, wasting his money on drink and foolish games of chance. To make the most of our situation, I've determined to learn everything I can about Dunmar City and the Nightingales, allowing the scholar within me to completely take over. While it's difficult to find people willing to speak with a member of the Conclave, there is a remarkable amount of information I can learn from simply observing the city dwellers in their environment. Wending my way through the busy streets, I head toward the Cabal to visit the elderly mages yet again, one of the ways I've found to break up the day-to-day monotony. I shift Legends of the Arcane to my other hand, and dab at my lips with a handkerchief from my pocket, wondering how in the light they managed to get sugar into these mountains. There must be some sort of underground trade network, I reason, regretting that I hadn't picked up another sticky bun. That would explain the city's apparent prosperity. My thoughts drift as I continue toward my destination. Fortunately, I've become familiar enough with the city that the Cabal is not hard to find. In no time at all, I enter the wide courtyard that marks the location of the mage's base. The domed edifice looks much less formidable to me than it once had, its grand yet sturdy structure rising from the courtyard like a lone toadstool in a forest of stone. As always, no guards stand outside of the Cabal, the steps leading up to its entrance bare and its doors unlocked. I quickly approach the building and climb the steps, pushing open the door and stepping inside without any hesitation. I've become a frequent visitor to the Nightingale Mages, and they've come to expect my visitations on something of a daily basis. Striding past the bookshelves, I make my way to the staircase and reach the top, finding the female mage, Edna, sitting at a table and scratching on some scrolls with a quill. She doesn't look up as I approach, her gaze intently fixed on the words she is scribing. "Back again, I see," she murmurs to herself, dipping the quill in a jar of ink and continuing the scratching. "You are an inquisitive one, aren't you?" "Where are the others?" I ask, pulling up a chair and sitting down across from her. "Ignis and Aldor are out inspecting the cavern's doors," she replies offhandedly. The hinges require a good deal of maintenance, and it's their turn to make the trip. I rest the tome on the table in front of me and lean forward intently, fixing the elderly mage with a curious look. So, you three were the ones who created those enormous stone doors? Edna pauses writing and glances up at me. Who else? I shrug. I just assumed they were made by the Nightingales who first settled this place. She eyes me for a moment, then sets down her quill. When we first arrived at Dunmar City, the Nightingales were little more than barbarians. They lived in huts and scratched out a meager existence in these mountains, struggling to raise crops by the hot springs while fending off the search parties of the king. We brought with us a knowledge of radiant magic, sure, but more importantly, the three of us were experts in engineering. It was our area of study at the conclave, you see. Over the years, we've been able to hollow out this mountain and bolster its defenses until it became what you see today, a bastion of freedom and a formidable stronghold. That's extraordinary, I reply in amazement. The sheer genius it would have taken to turn this cavern into a bustling city is staggering, especially considering that it was done in only a few decades. I'm curious. How does the ventilation system work? Surely in a city so large, the need for fresh air is enormous. Indeed, Edna replies offhandedly, picking her quill back up. We bored holes into the ceiling of the cavern, which takes care of most of the fumes created by the fires. As for the fresh air, we make sure to open the doors at least once a day. In the event of a siege, auxiliary vents can be opened in the side of the mountain, but so far, thank the light, it hasn't ever come to that. Fascinating. The conversation lapses into a lull, the crackling fire in the hearth filling the silence, along with the renewed sound of quill on parchment. I stare at Edna expectantly, calmly waiting for her to remember that I'm still here, sitting right in front of her. This is a game we've played before, the old mage ignoring me in hopes that I'll leave, and me waiting patiently for her to continue speaking. It isn't the most intuitive of strategies, but it has worked before. Finally, she lets out a prolonged sigh and sets down her quill once again. Miss Dennell, she says, lacing her fingers in front of her. As always, she forgoes the honorifics that usually apply to one of my station. You've come here every day, pestering us and poring over our books, all the while pretending that we're anything but renegades and apostates of the conclave. What exactly is it that you are trying to learn here, girl? I hesitate, considering my next words carefully. I've simply come to gain knowledge, Magus, I reply as affably as possible. The Cabal has accomplished some amazing things here, and I want to understand everything I can before I depart. I'm honored to have the opportunity to learn from such distinguished mages, regardless of fealty. Edna sniffs and leans back in her chair, which causes it to creak. Flattery is like manure, girl. Use too much, and the stench becomes unbearable. You'll not find me an easy source of information, like the other two codgers who live here. I'll not divulge our hard-kept secrets because of a pretty face and a silver tongue. My cheeks redden at her candid response, but I manage to maintain my composure. Now, enough with the small talk, the old woman continues without missing a beat. What are you really doing here?
It's as I said, Magus, I reply, forcing a friendly smile. I come merely to gain information.
Call me Edna, she responds dryly. We're free in Dunmar City, which means we're also free from the pomp and circumstance of the conclave.
I pause, reevaluating my plan. Unlike the two elderly men, who were more than willing to talk the day away, though not about anything particularly useful, this woman is a much tougher nut to crack. She seems suspicious, which she has every right to be. I'll just have to take a different approach, I think to myself, adopting a more determined look. If diplomacy will not sway her, perhaps being more direct will. Edna, I begin, leaning forward. I'm not above using a little flattery to achieve my goals, especially considering what it is we face. The R'hllar are coming for everyone. Make no mistake. This is bigger than Nightingale and Kingsman. It's bigger than all of our petty squabbles and prejudices. This is the most important thing in the world right now. Edna arches an eyebrow but does not interrupt. For the first time, she actually seems intrigued by what I'm saying. I continue. The Arc of Radiance is failing, which means it's only a matter of time before the R'hllar return to conquer our world once and for all. What you and the other mages of the Cabal have been able to accomplish here is extraordinary, and if the knowledge you've accumulated can help us in any way, then I will do anything within my power to acquire it. Do I make myself clear? A small smile rises to the corners of her lips, and she appears to eye me in a new, respectful light. After a few heartbeats, she breaks the ensuing silence.
Well said, she replies, then pushes back her chair from the table.
She stands, walking over to the fireplace and staring pensively into the dancing flames.
These demons, she says thoughtfully, I've heard rumors of their return, but we've seen little evidence of their presence here in the mountains. For all my research, I've never laid eyes on one of these creatures. Are they really as terrible as the histories have led us to believe?
That, and more, I reply softly. And we know next to nothing about their magic, their technology vastly superior to our own. If the Ark falls, I fear that our fractured kingdom will not be able to stop them. Even Dunmar City, with all its defenses, will be unable to survive should they attack.
Edna clasps her hands behind her back, her bent frame still facing the hearth, head slightly bowed.
Youth, she mutters quietly. All hustle and bustle, always hastily jumping to conclusions.
She sighs, then turns, studying me with her crystal blue gaze.
I do not think the problem is as bad as you say, girl. People don't get to live as long as I have without a healthy measure of skepticism. However, you seem earnest enough, and Protector Thel seems to trust you. I suppose that's good enough for me, even if you are a conclave lackey.
She lingers a moment longer by the fire before returning to her seat, wincing as she sits back down.
Go on, then. Ask your questions. I'll answer them as best I can.
My eyes widen, and then I smile, pulling out a small notebook and a pen. Well, I begin, opening to a blank page. I suppose I'd like to start with the new spells you've developed. What can you tell me about artificery? Time passes in Dunmar City, the days drifting by like clouds across a cold autumn sky. Even with my frequent trips to the Cabal and my late-night studying sessions, things have begun to grow increasingly stale, with no news coming back to us from Elias or Xander Thel. Fortunately, my conversations with the elderly mages have started to bear fruit. New spells and information on artifice that I had not previously encountered at the Conclave have been well documented by my own hand. With any luck, it will aid us in the days to come, I think to myself. Light knows we'll need all the help that we can get. Owen and I walk side by side near the great double doors of the cavernous city. An icy breeze blowing in from the outside, and giving the people within a chance to breathe the fresh air. We've developed something of a habit lately, going on walks most afternoons to pass the time. Today we've decided to take a tour of the outer defenses, to admire the engineering, and hopefully catch a view of the valley outside.
I think Talon might have a gambling problem, Owen says, leading the way past the doors and toward a staircase hewn from the rock of the cave.
Oh, I reply, my voice carrying the faintest hint of sarcasm.
What makes you say that?
The fact that he practically lives in the taverns? Or the fact that he's already gone through nearly all of his money?
Both, I suppose, he replies with a smirk. I'm just worried that he's going to have to be bailed out of prison again. He always seems to think he's one game away from making a fortune.
We climb the stairs, the Nightingale soldiers eyeing us suspiciously as we stride by them.
Maybe that's what it'll take for him to learn how to stop, I say, slightly winded from the climb. In my experience, rangers are a particularly hard-headed bunch.
He chuckles softly to himself and shakes his head.
I'd try and argue with you, but I know I'd probably lose.
The staircase leads up to a walkway carved into the inside wall of the cavern. Soldiers patrol here with crossbows, looking down on the city from their vantage points high above. As we reach the top, Owen gestures to a doorway set into the stone, sunlight seeping through and bathing the walkway in golden rays. Together we step through the door, walking out onto what seems to be a man-made ledge built onto the outside slope of the mountain. It stretches from either side of the great doors and resembles a castle wall with parapets and crenellations, providing the defenders with ample cover. Beyond those fortifications, I gaze out at a view that takes my breath away. The hidden vale that we had passed through sprawls before us, an idyllic valley nestled between the snow-capped peaks of the Ironback Mountains. Gouts of steam rise into the air from the boiling hot springs, and gaps in the swirling mists reveal terraced fields being worked by farmers, the stretches of green standing out like veins of emerald against the gray stones of the mountains.
Wow, I murmur, pulling close to him. That's something you don't see every day.
Yeah,
Owen replies softly, allowing me to press against his shoulder. We stand there, momentarily admiring the incredible scene as the chilly wind blows in our ears. After a time, I look up at him, studying his face with the same level of intensity. He looks more like Elias with every passing day, a hardened expression drawing lines in his suntanned skin. His eyes, a deep forest green, stare out at the vale in a silent smolder, and I find my gaze wandering down to his lips, my heart fluttering within my chest. He notices me staring and frowns.
What are you looking at, Zara?
I quickly look away. Nothing, I reply, taking in a breath of crisp mountain air. You just seem pensive. Is something bothering you? He sighs and leans forward, resting his elbows on the wall and staring back out at the misty valley.
I'm just thinking about the Emberwood, he says wistfully. About my apprenticeship and my life before all of this happened. It was a lot simpler back then.
I nod, but I don't reply, resting my arms on the wall as well.
I'm not saying that I'm not happy to have met you, he adds hastily, giving me a sidelong glance. It's just, I sort of miss the peace and quiet, you know? The world seems to have become a much more complicated place lately.
I place my hand on his and give him a comforting smile.
I know what you mean, I reply quietly. Sometimes I think about my dormitory at the academy and how much I miss my classes, even the boring ones.
His lips turn up in a sad half-smile. I meet his eyes, and for a moment it seems like he's about to say something else, but a movement below catches his attention.
"What's that?"
he asks, pointing down at the road leading up to the mountain's doors. A man, riding a horse at breakneck speed, races out of the mist and up to the entrance of Dunmar City. He doesn't slow down for anyone, and even from this distance, I can see that he is slumped over, bent with fatigue. A handful of guards rush out to meet him, their weapons drawn.
"I'm not sure," I reply, frowning.
"A messenger of some sort?" Owen takes a step back from the wall.
"Think we should go check it out?"
"Sure," I say, trying hard to keep the disappointment out of my voice. A perfect moment ruined, I think, biting back my frustration. Just when he's about to open up, something comes along and turns him back into the stoic ranger. We return to the cavern, descending the staircase and swiftly heading to the open doors. The late afternoon sun greets us once more, and we find a group of troubled-looking soldiers conversing with the rider beyond the barricade.
"Need to see Protector Thel,"
the rider exclaims as we inch closer, gesturing at the massive open doorway in front of him.
"We haven't any time for this."
One of the guards, the same one who'd questioned us when we first arrived at Dunmar City, sheathes his sword and runs a hand through his hair.
"Calm yourself, Garol. Quit babbling and tell me what this is about."
The rider dismounts, his legs shaky as he staggers over to the guards. His eyes are wide with fear.
"It's as I said, Sturgis. An army is on the march, and it's coming straight for us. We must immediately prepare the city for a siege before it's too late."
"An army?"
Sturgis scoffs.
"What army?"
"An army carrying the banners of the king."
Cold dread settles like an iron weight in the pit of my stomach.
"Oh, no,"
I mutter, reaching up and grasping my talisman. "So that's what Relos has been up to this whole time. Light almighty, he's been trying to start a war.